We could start. Hello, everybody. Today we have the speaker is Oliver Newton. Oliver is a postdoc in Lyon, the Institute for the Two Infinities, actually associated to the Institut de Physique Nucléaire de Lyon, where he's a postdoc since the start of the pandemic, actually 2019, right? Before he got the PhD in Durham, working with and supervised by Carlos Frank and Jenkins, and today is here to talk about the Hermitian halos, right? So Oliver, when you want, you can start. Remember that you have 30 minutes. We have up about 30 minutes to 25 for this presentation, then questions. I invite the people to ask at any time, not waiting for the end of the meeting. Thank you, Oliver.
So that should be the final slide. So yes, thank you very much for inviting me here today to talk about this recent work. It's a shame I can't be there in person, really, but hopefully in the not too distant future that will all start to change. So yes, this is a, as I say, a recent paper put up on archive. It resulted as a result of a bit of a, I guess, serendipitous kind of discovery, if you like. This is all simulation based. We found these objects in our simulations just before Christmas, so we thought we should pop something up on archive, make people aware of them, and then in the future start to dig into them a bit more. So this is kind of just an initial scratching the surface of them, if you like. So just to provide a bit of background, if the slide will advance, there we go. So I mostly look at the local groove and of galaxies and things like that within the system. So why is it interesting? Well, for many years, the Milky Way and M31 have often been modeled as relatively isolated systems, whose evolution is not really affected by the local environment. But of course, in detail, that's not necessarily correct. For some purposes, statistically speaking, perhaps it is, and it's a reasonable assumption that we can extrapolate from our understanding of those objects to the wider galaxy population. But as I say, in detail, they're embedded in a structure-rich and dynamic local group environment that must, at some level, affect how they evolved. So over the last decade, in particular, this has provided important motivation to improve the sophistication of local group simulations that help us to understand when these assumptions start to break down. One example of the dynamic nature of the local group comes from so-called backsplash halos. These are low-mass objects that are far outside the very radii of the two primary halos at redshift zero, but at some point in the past experienced one or more close encounters with one of them. Of course, these interactions influence not only the evolution of the backsplash halos, but also affect the evolution of the primary halos as well. The Hermeians belong to a related class. They're very similar to the backsplash halos, and they also potentially have these influences and effects on the evolution of the Milky Way and M31 halos. So what defines a Hermitian halo? Fairly straightforward. They are field halos at the present day, and at some point in the past, they passed within the viral radii of both local group primary halos. So that makes them a little bit more unique than your average backsplash halo. And of course, potentially gives rise to some interesting opportunities for facilitating interactions between both of those primary halos. So before I get into the science of it, you might be wondering why Hermitian? what's the motivation behind that? And that's just from an inspiration from ancient Greek mythology. It comes from Hermes, the god of travelers and wayfarers, who presided over the crossing of thresholds and boundaries, which seems fitting for our Hermes and Halos, which travel through the local group, crossing the boundaries of the Milky Way and M31 halos. There's a nice subtle additional link to this, in that Hermes was also a relation of the goddess Hestia in that mythology. And the two were invoked together during times of transition and change. And this link is particularly neat because the simulations that I'm using are the Hestia suite of local group simulations. So in this case, Hestia stands for the High Resolution Environmental Simulations of the Immediate Area. Not my idea. And it consists of 13 medium resolution, of which three of them are re-simulated at high resolution hydrodynamic simulations at the local group. In our language, high resolution means particle mass of about 2 times 10 to the 5 solar masses, and a gas particle mass of about 2 times 10 to the 4. And what's interesting, or particularly nice about these simulations, is that the initial conditions are constrained using observations of the Curie velocity field out to about 100 megaparsecs to reproduce the major gravitational sources in the local environment. And this ensures that by redshift zero, the local groups that form are embedded in a large-scale cosmography that's consistent with those observations when assuming a lambda CDM model. So as a result, these local groups are, we would argue, some of the most realistic simulations of the nearby universe that we have available to us at the moment. Going back to the Haumean halos in Hestia, we just focus in on the high resolution ones for now. As we'll see a bit later on, the Haumean halos are generally quite low mass, so the high resolution simulations give us the best opportunity to find a large population of them. Across all three, there are about 137 halos in total, but most of them are in one particular high resolution simulation labeled 1711, has over 90% of that population, and they account for about 1% of the field halo population, so not especially common. Most of them are dark at redshift zero, but four of them contain galaxies in it, and again, these four galaxies also happen to be in this particular 1711 simulation. So for ease, going forwards for all the plots, I'll just focus on that particular high resolution simulation. So to find the main halos, we reconstruct their orbital histories through the local group. And this plot shows the distance from each local group primary halo analog, the Milky Way and M31 analog, as a function of lookback time. So lookback time of zero is the present day, and 10, 11, 12 is 10 to 12 billion years ago. Here, the dark halos I've plotted with thin solid lines, and then I've marked the four galaxies with distinguishing markers and these thick lines. And I'll carry that kind of styling through for the other plots as well. The horizontal dotted line along the bottom, in both cases, is the burial radius of the host halo. And of course, our criteria for identifying them is that they pass within the burial radius of both. The eagle-eyed among you might notice in the right panel, there's about 8 GeV, there's a strange artifact in the trajectories, and that is just a glitch in the identification of the center of the primary halo by the halo finder. It doesn't actually affect our analysis though, so I've not corrected them. Although I can imagine a referee probably asking at some point in the future, so that may change. So we can see that most halos pass through M31 first before heading towards the Milky Way, although some approach from the opposite direction. So you have an earlier look, pyrocentric passage in the Milky Way before it moves on to M31. I think this is shown a bit more clearly if I plot the trajectories in simulation coordinates. So this is what I have here. Again, same line style, but just with the addition of the thick black line, which is the Milky Way analog, and the thick dashed line, which is M31. And I've marked the start of the trajectories for the Haumeans with these unfilled squares. And we can see much more clearly that there's a large group infall that brings in most of the Haumean population via M31 first. And as a result, they go on to exist at redshift zero, out beyond the Milky Way once they've traversed through the local group. But we also have a smaller collection. I won't call them a group. I don't think they are. They're just a collection of Haumean halos that come in from the opposite direction, from the direction of the Milky Way first, and that brings in the fourth galaxy with them. So essentially we have two sets of objects traversing in opposite senses through the local group. So how does this translate into a distribution around the local group? So to try and illustrate this, I've plotted the angular distribution of three populations. So here, when I say a field halo, I just mean halos that haven't interacted at all with the primary halos. Backsplash halos have interacted with only one of the primary halos, and then these Haumean halos are the ones that pass through both. So this is plotted with respect to the midpoint of the line connecting the Milky Way and M31. So you position yourself at the midpoint and then measure your angles with respect to the direction pointing towards M31. In that system, it means M31 is at 0 degrees, the Milky Way is at 180 along that line. And then we have these distributions here. So there are two notable things in this plot. First, as before, we see that most of the Haumeans end up out beyond our Milky Way analog in this particular simulation, and as a result of that group infall. We also see, if you look at the backsplash population, there's an opposite skew around the M31 analog. And it turns out that this is actually a signature of the group infall event. So, of course, the large group coming in brings in a lot of the Haumean halos, but it also brings in other halos that don't traverse. They may get caught in the M31 first and stay around it, becoming backsplash halos instead. So this is a signature of that group infall event, contributed a large proportion of that backsplash population as well. In terms of distances, again, measuring from that midpoint and keeping some of this directionality, this is the PDFs of the radial distributions of the halo populations relative to that point. In this sort of scheme, objects in the direction of the Milky Way, so in the Milky Way hemisphere, if you like, I've just essentially multiplied by -1. So they have a negative radial value, and those in the direction of M31 have a positive one. Here we see that most of the field and backsplash halos are within about 1 megaparsec of the midpoint, and most commonly are within the distance between the two primary halos. Whereas in contrast, perhaps by construction, there are no Haumean halos within about 400 kiloparsecs of the midpoint, and they're all at larger distances than the two primary halos. And the furthest Haumean halo is a distance of about 1.6 megaparsecs, and that's particularly surprising, as we wouldn't necessarily expect to find a halo that had interacted with both primary halos out at such large distances. So final point on the geometric properties of these, I thought I'd plot the angular positions of these halos relative to the midpoint, just doing an Azov projection. So I've marked on the Haumeans are marked on as these triangles, and plus for the four galaxies, the same symbols as before. And the Milky Way and M31 are marked on at -19 and +19 in L as these squares. I think this shows perhaps most clearly that the Haemean population lies along and slightly offset from the line connecting the primary pair. The large angular dispersion in ones around the Milky Way is again a consequence of the scattering trajectories of the infalling group. And this scatter was enhanced during their passages through the M31 analog. So in this simulation, about 10% of the Haemean halos, if you put yourself inside the Milky Way, about 10% of them are at low galactic latitudes, so would likely be obscured by a zone of avoidance for this particular realization. So hopefully all of this helps contribute to some testable predictions for the Haemean halos that might allow them to be identified in observational searches. So obviously these are all the geometric properties. Obviously their interactions with the primary halos also affects their intrinsic properties as well. So I'll just explore a couple of these and apologize for the busyness of the next plot. I'll try and distill it out. Co-author's got a bit excitable about what to include in it. So this is a plot of the concentrations of the Haemean halos as a function of their Vmax, well, not just Haemean halos, but the halo populations. For the field and backsplash populations, because there are so many of them, within the 99th percentile, I just switched to using contour line. But for the Haemean halos, I can plot each point individually. So the thin solid line, thin contour lines are the field halos, the dashed along to the backsplash. And also overlaid, just to make it even busier, courtesy of co-authors, is that shaded region. And that corresponds to backsplash halos that have fallen into a host exactly twice. So you would expect naively that they share at least some properties that are very similar with the Haemean population. And that seems to be the case. And I'll get onto that in a second. In the side panels, I've decomposed that space into the PDFs of the two different properties. At the top is the Vmax PDF, and we can see that generally the field backsplash and Haemean populations follow the same Vmax distribution, except that those that are interacting with primary halos tend to be, their distribution is slightly more truncated than the field halos. And that's a result of tidal effects during the periocentric passages with the primary halos, but also at the low Vmax end, those effects are enhanced artificially as well by resolution limitations in the simulation. So there's a limit about what we can say when it gets down to there. On the right-hand panel, have the C200 distribution. So I should say that the thin solid line belongs to the field halos, the thick dashed line is the backsplash, and the thick solid is the Haemean distribution. So these are the distribution of the concentrations, and I've applied a cut at about 30 kilometers per second, which corresponds to the highest Vmax Haemean halo that we have, just to try and aid some comparison, make a consistent apples with apples comparison there. I've also marked on with the arrows the median values of the distribution, of the concentration distributions. So we see that those that interact with the primary halos are generally more concentrated by about twice as concentrated as the field halos. And we also see that the N equals 2 population, which is that dashed arrow, is similarly concentrated, more concentrated, like the Haemean population is. So the high concentrations and not too low masses of the Haemean halos makes them suitable as potential sources of dark matter annihilation signals. Of course, some of the backsplash halos are as well, but we have with the Haemean halos, we at least have the unique geometric properties that might make them a bit easier to find in observations. So what does this tell us? What does this mean for finding dark matter signals out in the wild, so to speak? So to get a handle on this, we want to understand what factors influence the photon flux we would expect from dark matter annihilation signals. And there are two terms in this. There's the particle physics term, which is on the far right-hand side of that top equation. That incorporates things like the particle mass and its interaction cross-section and other terms that, of course, we don't really know. And then there's the astrophysical term, which is known as the astrophysical J factor. And this encodes astrophysically meaningful information, such as the spatial distribution of dark matter. And for us astronomers, this is the only relevant quantity that we can really model. And it acts as a scaling term for the particle physics component of the photon flux. So it gives us an idea of what we might expect, or how well we might expect these sources to be in observations. So as you can see from the second equation, the J factor basically tells you how much dark matter there is along the line of sight in a given aperture on the sky. So for the Haumean halos, it can be calculated by assuming some 3D spatial distribution for the dark matter. In our case, we assume an NFW density profile, but using an ASTO profile wouldn't change the result too much. So switching to the plot now, I've plotted the J factors of the Haumean halos versus their distances from the Milky Way analog and colored them by their virial mass. As expected, the distances have a small effect on the J factor, but it depends more strongly on the mass of the halo. We find that the maximum J factor, so, which happens to be correspond to the some of the luminous Haumean galaxies, the maximum J factor is comparable to that calculated for dwarf galaxies and galaxy clusters, but isn't quite so competitive with best-in-class objects such as Draco and other excellent potential sources for dark matter signals. So on their own, perhaps not revolutionizing the detection of dark matter signals, but potentially if we have such a large population as this, it could be still used if the dark matter photon sources aren't too extended. So to explore this, we look at the J factor versus the angular sizes of the photon emission regions for the Haumean halos, which is this plot. And I've colored them by their concentrations as well. Again, this trend is much as expected. So we expect more concentrated halos to typically have much smaller photon emission regions, smaller angular sizes than less concentrated halos. I've also marked on the point spread function for the Fermilat telescope. So that's that dotted line at 0.1 degrees. So halos to the left of this, i.e. halos with smaller angular sizes, would appear much more point-like if they were detected by Fermi, which obviously is dependent on modeling of backgrounds and everything else that makes that kind of work very difficult. But if they did appear, they would appear as point-like, and gamma ray observers could potentially carry out a combined likelihood analysis, as they do for dwarf galaxies, to improve the detectability of the dark matter signal. And just as a look ahead to the future, the Cherenkov telescope array will have an angular resolution of about 0.05 degrees, which means even then that most Haumean halos would still appear as relatively point-like sources, so could still be used in this kind of combined likelihood analysis to hopefully detect a dark matter signal. So I think I'm nearing the end of my time, so last couple of slides. There are plenty of outstanding questions with these Haumean halos. We obviously have a very small sample of local groups, so exploring what interaction has the largest effect on their properties, whether it's parasympathetic distance, the timing of parasympathetic passage, that kind of thing, it is limited at the moment. And of course, we can't really answer how the local large-scale structure affects the abundance of Haumean halos. In this particular simulation, obviously we have this large group inflow. Obviously it's a constrained simulation, so it should be consistent with our local group, but in our other two constrained simulations, we don't have this group inflow. So is it just a case of we were very lucky, or are we very unlucky that we should have more group inflow events like this, given our place in the universe, but we just don't see them in our high resolution simulation. So that's one big question that's still outstanding. In the simulations, we do see some evidence that they might affect, for example, the star formation histories of the local group primary halos, the galaxies within them. But again, with four galaxies, for example, four main galaxies, it's very difficult to say too much, and we need to do a bit more close, careful work on that before we can say much. And of course, how common are Haumean galaxies? And in particular, question of interest for me is, will we find any in the local group? And hopefully we'll have the answer to that in the not too distant future, but that will be to come. So to round off, these Haumean halos, some general points. They're not especially common. As I say, we would need a larger sample of local group simulations to be more quantitative. The abundance is likely affected by the local group primary mass, their proximity, and as I say, so possibly the large scale structure nearby. They're generally about twice as concentrated as field halos and the general backsplash halo population, and are mostly dark, but they can form galaxies and retain gas all the way through to redshift zero. And potentially they would appear as point-like sources of dark matter annihilation signals if you can detect them in your detectors. And finally, so if we wanted to try and narrow down where to look for these objects, they're anisotropically distributed in these lobes that are slightly offset from the Milky Way and M31 and the line connecting them. And they're generally at much larger distances than the Milky Way and M31 from the midpoint of that line. So I think that's me out of time. So thank you very much. And I'll hand back over to Carlo.
Thank you. Thank you, Oliver, for your presentation. I see someone clapping. Is there any question or comment already? Maybe I can start. Why are you wondering about the possible effect of the Hermian halos on the star formational history? While, as you wrote in the before, not in the last slide, in the last before, why they are mostly dark? Is there
any? So I suppose that applies much more to the Haumean galaxies. While most of them are dark, some of them can still have hosted, at least this is what we seem to be seeing in the simulations, they can have hosted some gas, for instance, or not so much stars in the past, but get stripped out when they pass through. So the fact that some of them can also retain some gas all the way through, potentially there could be the possibility for some exchange of material between the two primary halos, if not retained within the Haumean halo itself. So that's the thinking. We need to look at it a bit more to really understand that it could just be down to a single particle in our resolution of simulations, and so we can't say too much. That seemed to be the way it was looking initially. Okay.
Do you have any clue about the relevance of your conclusion depending on the way you simulate the hydrodynamic part? I mean, how much do your results depend on your implementation of a hydrodynamic simulation?
Yeah, I think our biggest limiting factor will probably be the resolution. We still need to look a bit more. So this project kind of grew out of an original project to look at star formation histories of dwarf galaxies in the local group. So the intention is to try and look at that a bit in a bit more detail as part of that project. So at the moment, I don't know, it would be difficult to say, I think, how important that implementation is. It is one of the most recent hydro schemes that we have available. So in terms of that, I guess it's as close to state of the art as we can get, and at least has been, as far as I know, quite well tested to reproduce many of the properties of observations that we see. So from that perspective, hopefully it's at least consistent. But yes, I agree. It could be significantly affected potentially by that implementation. So as I say, it's something that we're looking at as part of that other project.
Thank you. Yes, please, Kat. You're on mute.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks for a nice talk. So I have a question that maybe you said that, so apologies if I missed that. So what would be the most convincing observational signature for these objects? I mean, it must be hard to be sure that these are Hermian objects once you point your telescope. So
yes, so I think it will be a very difficult one to try and elucidate. I was pointed by a colleague to look at the, I think it's the NGC 3109 association, because that seems to have shown some potential interaction with the Milky Way in the past. But I don't know if anyone's really attempted any kind of dynamical modelling to try and extrapolate a bit further back and see, well, could it have possibly come from the direction of M31, and I suppose there are a lot of uncertainties with that that would mean perhaps we wouldn't be able to say conclusively. I suppose one of the best possibilities, if it were shown, would be if we could see some kind of correlated group info, like we have in this particular simulation, where you have a large group that passes through both halos. And if there was some signature in perhaps in the main halos, and you could correlate, if you could say, well, there was a group that passed through one and then came through the other, then that would be the best shot. But in terms of looking just at the Hermian halos themselves, I think you need a lot of dynamical modeling. I don't know if current observations can do that. I'm much more of a simulator than an observer, so I'm definitely open to hearing the observer side of things and their opinion on this to see if it's possible in any way.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? I see a question in the chat by Emmanuel Nesri. Thanks for the talk. You said you assume a Navarro-Franke-White profile to calculate the J factors. Why not using the dark matter distribution of the simulation?
Partially for ease of calculation with the machinery that collaborators had available to them. The concentrations are derived from the dark matter distribution of the simulation. Most do appear to be NFW-like, but giving a talk. So most are NFW-like. So it was a straightforward case of pass the concentrations over and model them that way. But I think the result would be similar if you were to take the actual distributions and model them that way. Perhaps a bit more complicated to set up, but it would be much the same, I think.
I don't see any reply by okay, thanks. Okay. Any other question or comment? I don't see any raised hands, so I'd like to thank you, Oliver, again for your talk, and remind to the next week seminar. I lost the information here. Yeah, next week we'll have Rory Smith talking about revealing the origins of clock spiral features in the cluster passive dwarf galaxies. And that's it.